Jason Breitmausberger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio with my main man, Tony D.
All right, as we continue, we're going to be heading to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive Insurance, making things even easier. We'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. All I remember about this song, and again, with Throwback Thursday, 1976, this was like the first song I played on Guitar Hero. That's all I got for this one. Jeremy Branham joins us, ESPN Houston, host of the Killer Bees, to talk Texans as they head to Baltimore this weekend to take on the Ravens. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I'm doing real good. How are things with you?
Not bad. I'm looking forward to this because I really didn't see the kind of output that Houston gave Cleveland, and now I'm kind of to see how far this rolls along. Give me an idea this season. It's one thing to be fine with the rookie quarterback and like what the rookie quarterback's doing, but it usually doesn't come with playoff currency. When was there a feeling that this really was a legitimate playoff team that could get there and win this division?
I would say the bye week, and they had their bye week in week 7. Now, a product of this was also their schedule. Keep that in mind, especially early, especially going into the bye week because they had a poor schedule. I thought if they could get to the bye week 500, that they had a chance to get to 9 or 10 wins with what was left on their remaining schedule. So I would say about then, when you got to the bye week at 3-3, I feel like people say, this is possible. Like, it's possible to get to 9 wins. It's possible to have a winning record. Now, they limped out of the bye. They lost to Carolina. They handed Carolina their first win. So it was like, okay, you feel good going into the bye, and then you feel terrible after the bye. So, but the two wins after that were big. It beat Cincinnati in that stretch. It's like, oh, you went to Cincinnati. They still had Burrow at the time. That was probably it. You know, you felt good going into the bye. You felt bad losing to Carolina. But then you go into Cincinnati. Nobody expects you to beat Cincinnati with Joe Burrow on the road with a rookie quarterback. You had just lost to Carolina a week or two prior. And then you beat them. And you beat them pretty convincingly. So I would put that as the milestone of kind of changing the opinions of a lot of people in the sense that the Texans could be a playoff team.
Outside of C.J. Stroud himself, because he's got to come in with confidence, he's got to come in with talent, he's got to come in with the right head on his shoulders, who are the names that are around his success? Who are the people that are instrumental in him having this kind of rookie season?
That's a great question. I think it's a question that we talk about a lot in Houston, really with the offensive coordinator. Bobby Slowick, who's being interviewed or is being requested to be interviewed. He's not interviewed yet, but he's been requested to be interviewed by a handful of teams. You know, how much credit do you give him? You know, he came from the Shanahan tree. He was in San Francisco with D'Amico. He's turned around one of the worst offenses into an offense that's on the cusp of the top 10. And they probably would have been if C.J. Stroud didn't miss a couple of games. How much credit do you give him? A lot of people in Houston don't really want to give him a ton of credit because they say, well, it's 99% C.J. Stroud, which they might be right, but what if it's 75% C.J. Stroud and 25% Bobby Slowick? So I think you have to give credit to Slowick. He's done a tremendous job, in my opinion. I think D'Amico's, even though he's a defensive-minded coach, he kind of helps with the mentality. I think he's helped with the confidence of not only C.J. Stroud but everybody else. And then Jarrod Johnson, I think, is a rock star head coach in the making, who's their quarterback coach. I think he's done a good – he actually had a relationship with C.J. Stroud before he was even hired by the Texans. But the supporting cast is good, too. Now, is C.J. elevating that supporting cast? Nico Collins is having a year this year that was better than his previous years combined. Dalton Schultz has had numbers pretty even to what he's had in his career. Devin Singletary has come along, has really helped them in the run game when they were dreadful in the run game early behind Damian Pierce. So I would say those guys. Nico's been outstanding. Bobby Slowick, it's hard to get a gauge of how valuable he is because he's never called plays without C.J. Stroud, but Stroud's never played a game in the NFL without Bobby Slowick.
Yeah.
So I'd say those are the key contributors.
On the other side, D'Amico Ryans, I mean, as a head coach, how much fingerprint is on this defense?
I think a lot. And I actually think it goes beyond the defense. And it was something that, admittedly, I was worried about because modern day in the NFL, you know, it seems like offenses win championships these days, not defenses. In fact, I don't think there's been a team outside of the top 10 win a Super Bowl like in the last decade or something like that. I think the defense win championships thing's antiquated. But what I think D'Amico is really good at is, one, it's the culture. Okay, this was a culture that was abysmal, even under Lovie, you know, who's a seasoned veteran. It just didn't have a good feel Under David Culley, it was atrocious. You know, you fired Bill O'Brien 4 games into the season the year before that. You'd won 11 games in 3 years. So it was a complete overhaul in the sense of what are the feelings in that locker room? What are the feelings over there at NRG Stadium? So he had to completely flip that. I think he did it quickly. And I think that's difficult to do. And sometimes we don't appreciate when a coach can flip the culture, especially that quickly. Like, you have players that are still on the team that were here last year. They were kind of like moping around, and now they're fired up and they're, you know, playing at 100%. I also think DeMeco is great with young players. I think he's great at pulling the most out of them. And I think we underappreciate that from head coaches. How often do we see these head coaches, you know, that they have openings that we're saying, oh, they should hire a great leader? No, you're like, oh, let's hire an offensive mind. And I think leaders are kind of the guys that you're supposed to hire. So he's great on that. In that area, he's tremendous there. Defensively, I don't think he's got a great defensive roster. I think it's young and it's played better in the second half of the season than the first half of the season. There was a video with him and Christian Harris that came out yesterday. Christian Harris had that second pick six in the game against Cleveland where he's like, hey, you got to be here, read the quarterback. And, you know, people were making that out to be like he's a defensive savant, which, I mean, he led the San Francisco last year, you know, defensive yards per game, led the NFL. So I think he's a really good defensive mind, but I think he's that leader that you want as your face of the organization.
It's very difficult, obviously, to defend against Lamar Jackson as versatile as he is. Mm-hmm. When you picture this Texans team doing that, is there something that stands out that they are doing well, or how vulnerable will they be against a guy that is going to win the MVP?
You know, the Texans are good against the run, but the Lamar Jackson element is much different than just like your normal NFL team. The Texans have been really good against everybody this year against the run, with the exception of the Colts. The Colts have kind of feasted on them. You know, the first game they had Anthony Richardson, but only for 2 series. The second game they didn't, but they still ran for a lot of yards. So it just kind of seems like that's a, you know, an offense they struggle with, that Colts offense. And I think there's some similarities a bit with what Baltimore does, because, yeah, I think the Texans will have success stopping guys like, you know, Gus Edwards and Justice Hill, and we'll see if Dalvin Cook gets any run. The things that I'm worried about are, what does Lamar Jackson do when a pass play on 3rd and 7 breaks down and he gets to the second or third level? Like, I think that's problematic. And that's where I think the defensive line has to be good. And I think the Texans' defensive line is capable of being good. Now, they've been a little banged up. Will Anderson's been playing through an injury with a high ankle sprain. John Gerard didn't play a whole lot coming off of what has been reported as a grade 1 ankle sprain. So those guys probably need to be healthy, although they've gotten some good play from Derek Barnett and they picked up in waivers. I think the key in this one's the interior defensive line, though. I think it's Malik Collins needs to play well. Sheldon Rankins needs to play well. Because I think that the Texans will be fine kind of containing the edge on Lamar. But if they don't get that interior pressure, Lamar is just going to squirt through a B gap and run to 30 yards. Yeah. So that's something that I'm concerned about. I think the defensive tackles need to play really well and generate some pressure up the middle.
I like big picture questions. I'm going to ask you this because you talk to the fans, you talk to the city. The players, if I ask them, they all believe that they can win. They're going to win. You know, their goal is to win. I get it. But I've used this analogy before. You go to a casino, you win money, and people say it's house money. But it's not. It's really your money. How are the Texans fans feeling about a team that won 8 of 11 now after this playoff win? This is a legitimately good football team. Is it house money, or is there a level of, we're going up against the number one seed, we don't care, but now we're back to expectations?
Yeah, I would say it's probably more house money than expectation right now. In fact, I've used that exact phrase. Now, I think that there are expectations to win. I've seen a lot of Texans fans that think that the Texans are going to win this game. I just don't feel if they lose, especially a close game. If they lose a close game at Baltimore, you know, one of the best DVOA teams like in the last decade, whatever, I don't think people are going to be upset. And a lot of that's because the future is ahead of you, right? First year head coach, first year quarterback, a nucleus that's built with a lot of really young players. So I think that it's more house money than expectation. I think the expectation probably starts more next season. And that's not to say that there's a good chunk of Texans fans like, hey, we're capable of beating Baltimore. But I don't think a whole lot of folks are still quite, yeah, we're a Super Bowl team.
Right, right.
I think they see Super Bowl in the future. I just don't think it's 2023.
I think if you were a fan and you watched that Week 1 game against the Ravens and somebody said, this is a playoff matchup, you'd probably say, I can't picture this.
Yeah, too early for that. Yeah,
yeah, really. You know, I mean, that's just so amazing to get to this point in January that 18 weeks later, 19 weeks later, we're talking about these two teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, we had those expectations for the Ravens. I don't know. Maybe the very few had those expectations with the Texans. Hey, look, that was CJ Stroud's first game. That game was 7-6 at the half, though.
Yeah, that's right. Jeremy, great stuff, and it's been a phenomenal story to watch the Texans do that this season. Thank you for your insight, as always. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Happy to be on with you.
You got it, man. Jeremy Branham, ESPN Houston, host of the Killer Bees on the Texans, are going to Baltimore to take on the Ravens on Saturday.